Blog Talk Radio.
The Visionary Hotspot. Talk radio with the consciousness of women, for women, by women. A radio show bridging the gap among women desiring their purpose with the world's greatest minds, achievers, and believers of women's progress. The Visionary Hotspot. Inspiring, encouraging, enlightening, and empowering women to live life as our greatest self. I am you, you are me, and we are Visionary Women.
Hello, hello, and welcome everyone to the Visionary Hotspot Talk Radio. And today we are here with Ray Luskin. Hi, Ray, how are you?
I'm good. We haven't talked in ages between my traveling and everything else, so I'm so excited. This is wonderful.
I know. It feels like it's been like, what, 5 or 6 years? It's been a minute.
I know, exactly.
Oh, my gosh. Today, everyone, we are talking about human trafficking, the what,
Hello?
The why, and the how. So tell me, Ray, why is this conversation so near and dear to you?
Well, this conversation is really, my background is I was sexually abused as a child, and therefore I have been passionate about improving the lives of women and children around the world for years. That was how I made sense of what happened to me, and I dug into my purpose, and I said, okay, I don't want this to happen to anybody else's child. And so I've been a community activist for over 40 years in this arena. I've been trying to make a difference on many levels, and so human trafficking is just one portion of it, you know, sex trafficking. There's a continuum of abuse that we see in this country and around the world. You know, women are not respected and loved and revered. They are, you know, they're coerced. They're beaten. They're robbed of their innocence and childhood in so many ways, whether it's, you know, sexual abuse, physical abuse, mental abuse. You know, there are so many ways that women and girls are start off with a handicap, unfortunately. And so they will often find themselves in abusive relationships when they get older. It's what they know, you know, and so the continuum grows. And the other part of it is our society is so wrapped up in I want to say this old men's society of, you know, that we are still property on some level, that they don't want to take any responsibility for what is going on in the world. And so it becomes the woman's problem. It's an experience of college life. A woman should just expect to be raped. You know, there is oppression around the world and violence. And so what? It's just part of war. You know, we have this attitude that it's the family's problem. It's the victim's problem. But it is a societal problem that affects all of us. And, you know, in the deepest levels, not only emotionally, but if you think about the cost physically, if you have people who've been abused, they are more apt to use the mental health facilities. They are going to have more times to the ER. So your children are going to be with their children in school, and there's going to be situations of bullying, and nobody's going to know why. And it is just wrapped up like this little, you know, like a spider's web. So
wow.
I think we need to address this issue.
Right. Now, you know, Ray, a lot of this, too, I think, and correct me if I'm wrong because you're the expert in this field, but a lot of this, too, Ray, I feel has a lot to do with the fact that we are not calling this what this is. Human trafficking is the new slavery, okay? Let's call
it
this what it is. Anytime you do something to someone against their will and you are being paid for the service, you are in turn creating a modern-day slavery. So what is this conundrum that's driving people to even want to engage sexually with someone when you know that there's such a level of perversion behind it?
Well, it's a major business. I mean, around the world, they say it is like $209 billion business. That's unbelievable. You know, it's like you have, you know, drugs and then you have this. You know, it's like this is what is driving the world, you know, and it's a big business. And there are levels. You know, you have human trafficking, you have sex trafficking. Human, and again, it is not only girls and women, it is boys and men as well. You know, you will have in the human trafficking arena, you have these young children, these boys are sent out to fisheries, you know, in Africa. You have them in India collecting bricks, you know, you have that. You have them going and being brought over to other parts of the world, a lot of the women being saying, oh, we'll get you a husband, we'll get you a job. And when they get here, they're forced into a sex slave or they're domestic, you know, they're a maid somewhere, or, you know, they're put into, you know, they're into situations where their passports are taken away, they owe you money because they brought you here, and so they're stuck, and half the time they don't speak the language. So that's one piece of it. And then on the sex trafficking side, it is not just people coming from other parts of the country. I think our system is broken. We don't start at the beginning. There are 150 million children, I think, that are out there, you know, who are homeless. And they've done studies, and a majority of them have left home because they are being sexually and physically abused, or they're in the system, you know, and they run away from foster care. And so these are the children who are going to sit there, and, you know, when somebody comes up and says, are you hungry? Let me take you to McDonald's. They're going to say, sure, because you got to remember, these are children. You know, the average age is like 14 now. These aren't grown-ups.
Wow.
They're children. And then the other piece of it is in the same thing, you know, I love to tell this story. This is based on a play by, her name is Mary Bonnet, and she lives in Chicago, and she's written three plays on sex trafficking. And her latest one was called Money Make 'Em Smile. And she tells the story of a young girl who's been in the system for many years, you know, no one wanted her, and then she finally finds a family who wants her. However, the brother in the family is egged on by his friends, and he's angry that why would you bring some stranger in? And she gets raped, and she doesn't tell anyone because she's embarrassed and ashamed and afraid they're going to throw her out of the house, and it's the first time she's been in a nice house. But she goes online and starts an online relationship with somebody who wants to be her daddy, who's going to buy her pretty clothes, buy her jewelry, take care of her. He eventually kidnaps her, takes her out of school, kidnaps her, and in the process then he says, you owe me. I took you here. I did this. And he brands her, you know, with really like a barcode and says, daddy's little bitch. And he then expects her to have sex 10 and 15 times a day. You know, this is the life of a young girl who's being sex trafficked. In this country, based on actual conversations with girls who are from here, they're not brought over, they speak the language, they've just gotten into these situations. And they're victims. And that's the other piece. We have to keep remembering, these are victims. They're not, you know, the law says that 18 and under, you are not responsible. You are a victim. If somebody's coerced you or, you know, forced you or threatened you and you are prostituting yourself. But think about it. Uh-huh. You've been doing this for 5 years and you're 19. How is that different? You don't know any better. So
wow.
I just find it so sad. The average age of a girl, the average lifespan is 7 years if you're in the sex traffic trade. And there are very few ways to get out. You go to jail, you have a nervous breakdown, you die, or somebody intercedes for you. Very little.
Wow.
You know, they don't have.
Wow. And I'm wondering too, Ray, how much responsibility do we bear as a society when we pretend that these people simply don't exist?
Oh, I think that's critical. It's really interesting because I've been doing this for a long time. And there were many, many years where, you know, domestic violence was a woman's issue. Then it became a human rights issue, you know, and then men were involved. But we still have this stigma. We don't want to talk about all these other pieces. But right now the buzzword is sex trafficking, and I think because we still feel somewhat removed from that, and we still, a majority of people still say, oh, it doesn't happen here, it doesn't happen to anybody we know, it's somebody who's brought over from somewhere else and crosses a border, that people are willing to talk about it. And it's just a misnomer. And so it is getting more interest from people. I'm surprised. You know, I go out in the community and I'll talk about it and they'll say, really, what can I do? You know, not that it's not a new issue, but they can look at it from slightly different perspective and take a step back.
Wow. Wow. Now, you know, a lot of it, too, I'm finding, Ray, is that when it comes to human trafficking, it's almost as though we are saying it so much now, it's like it's having a life of its own. And it almost feels as though it's just another social issue. You know what I'm saying? This is it's almost like the vibe that we're getting from society is that it's just simply another social issue. That's those people. You know what I'm saying? It's like almost looking at the drug epidemic. Those people. People who are living in low-income families. Those people. So how do we start, I guess, bringing awareness?
I think we have to start telling stories of people who are not low-income, who are not from the poor parts of town, and talk about those stories so that they're more relatable. You know, there are people who are trying to do that. There are people around the world doing different art exhibits and things and trying to do it through dance. It was really interesting. You know, I wrote this book called The Creative Activist, Make the World Better, One Person, One Action at a Time, which I sent you. And, you know, there were, I've interviewed 180 people. And, you know, one of them is, she owns a dance company here. She's in her early 30s now, and she started this when she was 26. And she started talking to some woman who's from India and said, I'd really like to do a play on physical violence against women. You know, there was a story about this woman in India. I'd like to be able to tell it. And then it was really interesting because in the process of her creating this piece, she was then able to tell her own story. She'd never told her parents that she'd been in an abusive relationship in college. You know, so all of a sudden we have new ways to identify and tell our stories. And I think those are the stories that are going to reach more people and make it more relatable and say it's a human problem. It's not their problem. It's our problem. You know, and this is a girl who grew up in Chicago, you know, was, you know, well-educated. You know, I mean, I can talk to, you know, one of the organizations I work with, this woman is a surgeon, and she was in a situation where she'd come in, and she had bruises all over her body, and she'd be changing into her scrubs for surgery, and not one person said a thing to her. You know, those kind of situations, and, you know, well-educated, you know, well-off, all this, but, you know, what we have to do for the victim to identify, and then as a society, there's two different pieces to this, you know, because too often the victims just feel they're victims, and life will never change, there's no hope, there's nothing I can do, and then there's the other piece of it is how do we get society to recognize, like you said, it's not their problem, it's all of our problems, and again, as I said earlier, one of the basic ways to do this, start talking about the cycle of violence in the way that it affects you and your family. You know, that it isn't just this problem. Or, you know, because like I said, you're going to school. You know, your kids are in school. They've witnessed this. They know what's going on. Your child's going to school and isolating, you know, because they've got this thing going on at home, and they're now doing sex on the, you know, doing sexting, and they're doing this, and they're, you know. Of course, this is going on right in front of us, and all the other kids learn about it, you know. And then you've got that as an issue, and it's in the school. And then you've got, there are so many ways that this impacts all of us, you know. Because, yeah, think about it. Who's buying sex? You know, in Chicago, it's not the poor people. It's the guys on the North Shore who have lots of money. It's the guys who are having the bachelor parties, the college fraternity parties, you know, and they're bringing in a girl. Well, she wants it. Well, no, she doesn't want it. She's 12 years old. What does she know, you know?
Right.
She's stuck. She's caught. But if we start telling these stories in different ways and through different mediums, whether it's photographs, stories. One of the other women I interview is Ann Reams, and she has this Voices and Faces project where she has done a video around the world of women who have been impacted by violence and gives them a face so that you can't just say, you know, it's that kind of person. It can be anyone. You know, and so she does writing workshops, and so they get the articles published, and they're trying to get more and more out and create plays and, you know, around these subjects, and there's music, and there's so many ways that we can start seeing it slightly differently.
And, you know, I think, too, what's really important is to make sure we understand how to be there for people. You know, everyone today wants to be an expert, okay? Everybody's an expert on every damn thing. But so often we forget that if we're not qualified, we need to become qualified on how to help everyone. If I have a brain tumor, I'm certainly not going to go to Ray unless you are an expert in pathology. Okay?
Right.
I am most certainly not. So the idea is everyone is an expert, but no one is a candidate to learn. So how do we start teaching? Where do we go to learn?
There are different organizations. One of the big ones is Polaris. And they have a lot of research they've done. You know, they have different things, the signs of what it is to, you know, for human trafficking. What are you looking for, you know, to recognize the signs? And so those are some of the places you can start. But the one thing I've learned is I'm not qualified. What you need to do is report it and say, I suspect this, because you don't want to try and grab somebody off the street and say, hey, come with me. I can help you, just even though you think you can, you know. Yeah, so we have to start finding those things. One of the statistics I found really interesting, and I think we as a society have to start thinking about this, is only 10% of people called the hotline, but 23% texted. So
wow.
We keep talking about calling hotlines, and so maybe we need to rethink our campaigns and what we're doing and saying to people that there are other ways to reach out and get connected. I found that just fascinating recently. I don't know what to do with that, but, you know, we've always had these, you know, the ads on TV and if you know this and stuff. But I think one of the big opportunities to do, we also need to do, is connect with organizations that have big public arenas. Like, I think we need to spend more time and cultivate a relationship like with the NFL, with the U.S. soccer, you know, things like that, because they found that more and more time, when they have the Super Bowl, there was an increase in sex trafficking. And there was a big push because, you know, when you think about where it was in Texas this year, and there were all these hubs to either bring people from Mexico, you know, there's all these things. And so they end up like this one, Mary Bonnet, her play was produced in Houston at the time, so they could try and counteract some of the effects, make people aware of what was going on and things like that. But I think we need to cultivate these relationships and say, you need to create PSAs. You know, this is when you get a big preponderance of guys, you know, and boys who are the ones who could be, you know, we could potentially turn them to allies. Rather than either neutral or, you know, predators.
Yes, I love that. I love that. Because, you know, reaching another generation of people who can potentially change the world should be our real endeavor. Because at this point, we realize that is how things change. Change is not going to necessarily come from older generations, but it's younger generations lifting their voices and raising the sound to these social issues that will bring change. Everyone, we are going to take a quick break, but we will be returning with Ray Lutskin to talk about human trafficking on the other side of this commercial break.
Join us at thevisionarywoman.com, a media network of women, for women, by women. Watch our hosts of insightful video exchange interviews. Listen to the Visionary Hotspot Talk Radio to empower your evenings and read fascinating articles of perseverance and inspiration, all with you in mind. Visit thevisionarywoman.com and follow us on our social media pages, Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter.
Yes, everyone, and we are back from that wonderful commercial. And again, we are here with Ray Lutskin, and we're talking about human trafficking, the what, the why, and the how. So we're already talked about, Ray, the what. We've already spoken about, very briefly, the why. Now let's talk about how. How do we start, A, preventing? How do we start, B, bringing more awareness to this? And then how do we start living in a space where people who are suffering from this tragedy of slavery, how they can feel comfortable and have the fortitude to want to say, this is my story, this is what I'm going through, and I need your help?
Well, those are big questions in a short period of time. But I'll start with a couple things that I think are important is we have a responsibility in every community to vote. We can create laws that protect these children, give them opportunities instead of incarceration. You know, we can provide programs that help in prisons, because a lot of them end up in prison, you know, because they'll be 20, 21, and they're arrested for prostitution, that we give them the programs in prison that help rehabilitate their lives. One program that came to the Illinois recently is called Cell of Freedom, and they have a residential facility in Florida, and they just opened up one up here, and they're working closely with the Cook County Police Department. And that's the kind of thing you can think about in your own community. Where do these young women go? How can we change their lives? What I loved about this program, you know, when you think about it, most of these girls have not had role models. So there's a mentoring opportunity within the community, and people can volunteer. And so these young women, most of them don't have their GEDs, so they help them get that. They also provide counseling and nutrition. People come and teach them how to make jewelry, how to do different things that they may never have had an opportunity to do, so they can be the young girls that they want to be. I actually visited the home in Florida when I was down there about a year ago, and they look just like every other college girl. You know, their rooms were decorated. They had vision boards. They had affirmations up. You wouldn't know unless you knew, you know, that they had suffered. You know, they were all had chores.
Right.
They were all contributing in such a positive way. And I think that's the kind of facilities we need, those opportunities, so these young women know they're worthwhile. You know, they've been told they're worthless all their lives. They've been told they're broken. They're,
right.
You know, they're wounded to the core. And so how do we as a society start addressing that? And so it has to be in the places where they're at, and we have to meet them there. Another organization here is called Dream Catchers, and this woman was on that side herself. And when she got out, she declared she was going to do something about it. And so she recently had a movie made, a documentary about her life, and she goes into the high schools and talks to the girls about it and makes them aware of what it is and about self-respect and what it, you know, and about taking care and what are your options so that they don't feel they're stuck. And she also goes out into the streets, and when she meets a girl, she says, "What do you need to get out of here? You know, what would it take?" And she asks them. And
wow.
So tries to find
wow.
the facilities and the wherewithal and the counseling. So it's a big job. I think that's one piece of changing the dynamics of what we do. And I think the conversation about what can we do to prevent, you know, it was really interesting. I was in D.C. Not this March, last March, and we were there. And we went and talked on the Hill about the Homeless and Youth Act to protect our youth, which was originally done in 2013, and it's never been reinstated. And it was a really good act. It was helping, you know, young people who are on the street get, you know, 30 days of care, and, you know, and that they could get counseling and, you know, things like that. There was transitional living, you know, geared for the older children and things like that. So it was crisis intervention on the street, you know, it was outreach. And then the money ran out in 2013, and they still have not passed it. Now, when you think about reauthorizing
wow.
this, we have so many critical problems. But what they added to the bill, which is what is unfortunate, is they wanted to start collecting trafficking data. Adding a non-discriminatory clause, increase the stay at 30 days, it was 21. You know, things like that, because they notice that there's an increased number of LGBTQ kids on the streets and these runaways, and they wanted to do more work because they are the greater number of getting exploited now. They say one in five of the 11, you know, and one in five kids in 2015 were reported they were victims of sex trafficking. You know, 28%
wow.
of youth living on the street trade sex for basic needs, you know, and then they suggest 40% of the runaways today are the LGBT community. So we need to start using the law, you know, in a better way, and we need to demand that our government support this and support women. VAW is getting, you know, is having trouble getting reauthorized as well. We are a society that, you know, where unfortunately we have a role model and as a president who thinks it's okay to grab pussy. Well, that is not okay, and that is what sets up these guys to, hey, they want it, you know, therefore we're going to buy it. You know, if our wives don't give it to us, we'll buy it, you know. And so we have to clearly think about our role models. We have to think about what the government can do through the legal system.
Wow, wow. And I think also, as you well mentioned, you have to also set up the legal system where it is convenient for people to feel comfortable. Now, my problem with this data thing is, what someone with nefarious thoughts could do with this data. So I just don't know how I feel about someone collecting data on people who have been victimized by human trafficking. Whereas in my mind, it seems as though we should be focusing more on the need of the person versus it, when I think in terms of tracking information, it's almost as though you're if you think in terms of tracking something for what purpose? Is it for collecting data to compare data, or is it keeping up with the actual person?
Well, I think in this case, and again, I'm not an expert in this at all, but I think they are just trying, because it's a new population that's on the street and they don't have any data really on this. And they're just trying to understand what are the needs of these kids and how they can better help them. Now, I may be far off the track. I don't know. I didn't consider what you're saying, and that's interesting. I do believe the services are critical. We need interventions. We need programs in high school and college talking about this. And we need new ways for the kids to be reached, you know, so that we can talk about when you get into the situation where things seem really bad, where do you turn, you know? And to know that when somebody's offering you a place to stay, there's usually something in return. They want to buy you pretty clothes. Don't expect it to be for free. But, you know, they're children. They don't know this. They don't have that ability to discern. And so, unfortunately, we have to start younger and younger. If kids are leaving home at starting at 12, then we really have to start early to start addressing these, just like we had to start addressing safe touch, you know, almost in kindergarten and first grade. We have to start addressing this issue as well. Now, I can't speak for human trafficking around the world, but this is what I can talk to as far as here in the United States with sex trafficking.
Exactly. Now, Ray, tell us in these last 2 minutes of our show about your book, how we can get it, how we can receive it, and how we can start to live by it.
Well, my book is based on the idea that we live our legacy now, that we all can do something, you know, whether it is learning what are the signs. Just go to Polaris and spend 5 minutes reading what are the signs, so that when you're in a situation, think about it. Nail salons are huge human trafficking places. These women are brought there and said, you'll work for free until whatever. And they're you know, or they're, you see somebody who's a nanny, a maid, things like that. So that's one thing you can do. Now, my book is available on Amazon. And it really is personal development meets leadership. So I have 36 stories of people doing incredible things around the world on all different areas, not just this. Somebody with suicide who uses music, you know. So there's other people using art for healing in a hospital situation. I believe in creativity as a tool, and self-expression is a huge tool for healing personally and the world. That's my big passion. I love to talk about it. And work with people who want to take an experience, a story that they personally have, and transform it into a piece that can help other people. Because there are people crying to hear your story. There's somebody praying out there that they need to know who you are. So to any of your listeners,
Now, Ray, tell us, what is the name of your book again?
Oh, it is The Creative Activist, Make the World Better, One Person, One Action at a Time. It's on Amazon, or if you contact me.
Yes, and everyone, you will know it when you see it's beautiful, bright green, okay? There's no way in the world you can mistake this book, because it is amazing. I read that book from cover to cover. Now, everyone, thank you so much for joining us today at the Visionary Hotspot Talk Radio. Remember, you can always catch me, Charmaine Caraway, at thevisionarywoman.com. I'm on Facebook. I'm on Instagram. I'm on Twitter. I am in Venus and on Mars. Let us know, Ray, what website can we reach you at very quickly when our audience wants to reach out to you?
thewinningadventure.com. Or you can look me up as Ray Luskin. It's R-A-E-L-U-S-K-I-N. So you can find me if you Google me, but my company's called The Winning Adventure.
The Women Adventure. Everyone, it has been a pleasure. We will see you next Thursday at 5 p.m. Central Standard Time at the Visionary Hotspot Talk Radio. Bye.
Bye.
The Visionary Hotspot. Talk radio with the consciousness of women, for women, by women. A radio show bridging the gap among women desiring their purpose with the world's greatest minds, achievers, and believers of women's progress. The Visionary Hotspot, inspiring, encouraging, enlightening, and empowering women to live life as our greatest self. I am you, you are me, and we are visionary women.